Most of my friends think I'm insane and they have no idea why I'm doing it. But for me, my why is so strong. That's what will keep me going. Like, everything's probably going to go wrong over the next few years, but a few things might go right. And that's what I live for. That's what's going to be really exciting.
Hey, welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment with me, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment breaks down the secrets and systems world-class founders are using to build their business, their body, and their brain. Today, I'm chatting to Charlie Butler, the founder of Bounce Insights. If you're looking for the template of what a brand new modern entrepreneur is, it's this guy. He is just, the word visionary is thrown around a lot, but he has no ego, incredibly self-aware, and is building a company from the ground up that is going to shake an entire industry. This is my chat with Charlie Butler, the founder of Bounce Insights. I've got a massive ambition for this podcast. I want to make this the number one business podcast in the world. If I'm going to do that, I've got to be world-class on every single level. And that includes having a world-class studio, which I now have at iconic offices, The Green Room. It's an incredible space. I first recorded here with my live pod back in June and I loved it. And get this, it's publicly bookable. That means you can go online and book it right now. As I said, it's called The Green Room. It's a private cinema and screening room. That means it's perfect to wow a client with a pitch, host a private screening, or do what I do, record a podcast here. So, as I record here, and as you know, I'm a member of Iconic Offices, I've got the team at Iconic Offices to hook us up with a number of exclusive complimentary office trials and discounts for my audience for booking this exact space. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description, grab the offer that works best for you. Thanks, Iconic Offices. The Wealth Summit is on the RDS on November 15th. It's for entrepreneurs, business owners, and those that aspire to be. If you're at the startup, scale-up, or sell-up stage of the entrepreneurial journey, then the Wealth Summit is for you. Learn how to build personal and business balance sheets through business growth strategies and build out critical paths to financial independence. Join Stephen Bartlett, Niall Quinn, Mandy Hickson, Tom Gannon, and 30 other speakers for a day of empowerment, motivation, education, growth, and networking. And we have an exclusive offer for listeners of the pod. For €150 plus VAT, you're going to get a discounted Access All Areas ticket, which also gives you access to the Wealth Tribe lunch, and it gives you a free masterclass on November 16th on how you can actually implement AI into your business. So click the link below to avail of this incredible offer. Charlie, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
This one's been a while coming, hasn't it?
It is a very surreal feeling, to be honest. I remember being in the audience, what, was it 5 years ago?
2019,
looking at Devin, Garrett and yourself, thinking, God, those guys are so cool. They're so cool.
I wish.
Yeah, I know. And then I was saying, I'll probably give myself away as being a bit of a creep in terms of how many of the podcasts I've listened to. I'll start quoting all of these other Irish founders. But yeah, imposter syndrome is kicking in. But
you're a rising star for this season, so drink it in.
Yeah, I don't know. Me ma will be so proud of me.
Your ma's like, what now? She already probably thinks it's quite strange what you do, so this will just be an extra layer of strangeness.
One of the best things is ask your parents to do the elevator pitch in your company and you realize how bad you are at explaining it.
It's he does something test. In computers. He's a lot of computer
he's
stuff.
A loyalty tech person.
Yeah. The internet. He's on the internet. Charlie, what do you do?
I am the founder of a consumer research startup in Dublin and now in London called Bounce Insights. Founded as a almost completely different business close to 5 years ago. Remember the first day was my 21st birthday in Trinity College. And we've built it up now to about 15 people and operating primarily in the UK and Ireland, but aspirations to get it global. And we work with some of the biggest brands in the world to help them understand consumers, make better decisions, and ultimately make better products. It's kind of the simple thing that we try and offer. But as you'll probably learn, it's an incredibly complex and messed up industry that we've fallen on our face many, many times to try to figure
what
out.
What is it in a nutshell that you do?
We provide a consumer research platform to brands that enables them to run surveys to specific consumer groups so that they can get insights very quickly.
Okay.
It's basically a decision-making platform. But what we do is we provide the technology, but as well, we put people on top of that to basically advise them what you should do, what group you should speak to, and how you should interpret those insights. Because in research, the reason why the DIY craze only went so far with the likes of Qualtrics and SurveyMonkey, sorry, DIY, like do-it-yourself type research, everyone thought that was going to be the thing that disrupted the industry, and it did. Qualtrics is huge. But what we saw when we spoke to a lot of these brands in the early days was they don't know what they don't know, or they don't know how to design a survey, or they don't know what a nationally representative audience looks like, or they basically got freaked out. And if you have a non-educated researcher trying to use a DIY tool, you get bad data, which is often worse than no data, because you're basically trying to validate your own confirmation bias a lot of the time. So we try and provide technology as well as like the comfort of like exceptional service to really understand their business and just make it easy for them to get closer to customers. And how I would describe it is, in how many meetings are you in where myself and yourself are trying to figure out what decision to make, and we're just using all of our biases and all of our guesswork and all of our intuition. So if you ask me, what do we need to do next season in the podcast? You would sit there and you do your review and you'd be unbelievable at your process. But what if I could get a sample size of 100 of your most loyal listeners, and I could get them design a really good survey, which is objective, it's non-leading, and I could give you that feedback back? That would be transformative to your business. Mm. And that's what we do at scale, is effectively what we're trying to do.
Humans are awful at feedback.
Humans are irrational. Awful. They're terrible at feedback. They either love giving their opinion or they won't tell you what the truth, because they're trying to, they'll answer the survey in a way in which they think they'll appear cool. So trying to make sure that their personal information is anonymous, that you're incentivizing them well, that you're treating them well is the key, and that the questions are well-designed. I mean, you're never going to get rid of every bias, but it's... We're certainly doing our best.
How do you come up with an idea like that, though? Because you were relatively young starting it. So where does that come from?
Honestly, it came from a desire to set up something. I realized when I was in school that I had no interest in a lot of the traditional career paths. I was in school and we heard from doctors, we heard from lawyers, we heard from accountants, we heard from everyone. But I never heard from Gary Fox, and I never heard from Devin Hughes, and I never heard from Garrett Flair. So I never knew what it looked like to just like have a crack at something and figure it out as you go, until I was in college. And I was in Trinity, and I remember Michael O'Leary came in for a talk at 7 a.m. for the Trinity Entrepreneurial Society, which I think was ran by Kate Fullen, which is quite funny. He's obviously now a big head in the startup scene.
She sure is. Kate's great. Kate works for Elskstone. I'm familiar with her. She's super. Big fan of Kate.
I remember that was going to be my win for the week. If you can picture back, I'm in second year in university. I'd probably been out three times that week. And I said, I'm going to feel good about myself if I just go to this talk. And thank God I did, because I went to it. And 7 a.m., I was like, God, look at me getting up at 6 a.m. and going to a talk. But Michael O'Leary basically said, you are going to be in university for 4 years, surrounded by the smartest people you'll ever be surrounded by, with the least amount of responsibility and the most amount of time. Don't fuck it up. And it hit me like a train between the eyes. And I was very blessed to have friends in university that had a very similar interest to do something. So honestly, Bounce came out of us meeting up at the top of the arts block with a whiteboard, trying to figure out what are we going to do? And we tried to get complementary skill sets. So we had friends who were computer scientists, and we had friends who were in business and engineering or whatever it was. And it started with a pretty big group of us, and we worked on all these different ideas. And where Bounce came out of, honestly, was one of my co-founders was working on a different business, which was like a loyalty type company, similar to Matthew Coffey's Squid, who just absolutely blew everyone else out of the water in that market. Unbelievable. And then we were working on a kind of different business. And then I was meeting up with people like Finn Murphy, who was with Frontline at the time. And he was giving me advice at cool startups coming out of the US. So I was kind of just sticking my fingers in as many pies as I could. And Bounce came from like the amalgamation of some absolutely cataclysmic failures, some laughable pitch decks. I have a folder with all of my old pitch decks of all the ideas I had. And they're just so bad. But like, we didn't have any incredible idea. It was the boiling pot of a few different mediocre ideas that actually became Bounce. And then we just kind of backed ourselves to continue solving the problems in an industry that had loads of problems, which ended up being the research industry. So I have no beautiful story where I was sitting on the edge of a cliff looking at an idea.
There's a ton to unpack there. First of all, Michael O'Leary, banger advice. Like, that's just gold, right?
Yeah, it was gold.
I think college gets wasted. College is wasted on the young. But it's true, though, in terms of like, you know, it really is an exceptional time. I do a good bit of work with Trinity. And like, I always say that to them. I was like, you're in a golden window here. You have a world-renowned brand behind you. And you have this time that you can kind of just use to really explore what you want to do. Like, it is an exceptional time. That's great advice. Also, I like the fact that you're disproving one of these truisms about startups, you know, oh, the worst thing you can do is, you know, start without a problem. And the worst thing you can do is just have a vague idea. But that was the best thing for you at that time, because you had time to explore all the ideas that wouldn't work.
And it's one of the things that if I was to speak to myself back then, the thing I would say is, if you're trying to build a startup, listen, sell, and then build, in that order.
Yeah.
Listen to the problems, sell the solution, because people will tell you that, God, isn't this a great idea? And one of the things that would always frustrate me was, because I'm typically quite high energy and I'm in all these meetings, like so energetic and excited to just like be speaking with this person, that they're going to tell me what you want. You know, the mom tests, you know, the idea of like, it, like basically the strategies to try and get rid of that. Like, that's why listening to pain points, selling them, actually getting them to buy something and then build the product was critical for us. And I think that could, we could have applied that framework to pretty much any problem in any industry. And I think that's really cool for us now, because any new product we build, before we press go on any sort of product development, we'll build a prototype, we'll sell it to our existing customer base, and if enough buy it, then we'll roll it out with any sort of sales material. So like, very simply, we've launched a new product called Tracking. It's just a type of research solution. All of our customers were asking us for it. I went to Ronan, I was like, oh, we need to build this. And he was like, no, sell it. Like, prove to me that they actually want it and they're not just kind of telling you something because you're speaking with them. Like, they don't want to waste your time. If you've asked for the meeting, they're going to tell you some of the things that are kind of a problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then you try and sell it. We sold it. We hadn't even built anything. And then we got Josh, Brandon, Ronan. Now you have to go build it. I've just sold it. And that's how you actually do that. But we now do that, employ that into every part of our business. Because in the early days, I think we built for 6 months, we failed to sell, and then we forgot to listen. It was the complete opposite. So you learn by some pretty...
At what point did you learn that? You've given me the title for the episode, by the way, Listen, Sell, Build. Beautiful. Jem, at what point did you learn that lesson though? Because that is a hard lesson. You make it sound very simple there. That is one of the hardest lessons I think every entrepreneur must learn, and some never learn it.
I'm still learning it. I would say I've made the mistake this quarter with that still. Like, we're, cause every new feature you build, you want to build. Like, what do you mean? Of course I'm right, Ronan. So I'm still learning it. I think we got much better at it after the first big failure, after about a year and a half of, or 2 years of building what we thought was going to be our business. We got absolutely humbled. And that was, the original idea we had was this idea that no consumers were ever going to do surveys. We thought that if we could solve the tech, if we could build technology to convince any type of person in the country to give their time to surveys, that would be amazing technology that we could white label and license to research agencies. So our idea was not to go direct to brand. It was, we're going to build a respondent or a consumer experience that is flawless, and we will package that up and sell it to the research agencies. And after a year and a half of building and like flawless technology, it's still to this day is one of probably some of the best tech we've ever built. We built these like beautiful push notification algorithms, this flawless respondent or survey experience, these dynamic incentives so that we could convince Gary to answer a 5-minute survey who has no right to be doing a survey. You've busier things to be doing, or better things to be doing, or a 19-year-old college student. This idea of like, how do you understand the psychology of the consumer? We thought we were about to be the next Collisons, you know, that we were like, we've nailed this. In our industry, we're going to completely transform it.
But if I stop you there, the logic there is solid. Like, there's nothing you've said there where I'm like, ooh, like it all makes sense.
Because everyone we spoke to told us it was.
Yeah, but it does.
Because it does. Of course it makes sense.
On paper.
And researchers, Jesus, that is an amazing idea. And the issue was, it was impossible to commercialize because of the timing of the market. What I didn't know, because I didn't go out and speak to enough people or listen closely enough, and I took on what I wanted to hear, was that there were this growth of what were called panel exchanges or programmatic exchanges, which were basically people needed access to more consumers. And our hypothesis is the issue that people can't access consumers is because not enough people are responding to every given survey. So I'll explain this. So if you send a survey out to 100 people, the average in the industry was one or two people responding, which we were like, that's not sustainable. That's never going to last.
That's wild.
So we built technology for that to lift up to 60, 70, 80%. And we thought that's going to transform the industry. But what did the industry do? What is a much cheaper, faster way of doing that? They built exchanges that would tap into web and app traffic to increase the people in the top of the funnel. So our way of solving it was, we will increase the bottom of the funnel. We'll get more people engaging from the bottom up.
Their solution was, well,
there's 8 billion people in the world. We just need to get more people in the top. It doesn't matter if our completion rate is 1 or 2%. We'll get more people in. Turns out that was a, that's a way more scalable, way more cost-effective way of doing it. And that company called Cint IPO'd for over 2 billion last year. And they acquired the next biggest competitor. And they run the panel marketplaces for the world. So that was one of the like global reasons why our business couldn't be commercialized. I still think it's a really good idea, that business on its own.
But logic again.
But when we went back to our prospective customers after we met with all of them, by the way. So this is what's key about that piece of advice is that we met with all of them. And I
all
thought
of who?
All
meet?
Of the research agencies.
Yeah.
And they told us their problem. So that's why actually the reason you're right, the advice is so hard, is that you think you're listening, but you're not. Mm. So having a process for what we call customer discovery is essential, which is how do you actually get the information on the pain points?
How did you meet them?
Like I am the worst for, if anyone has ever received a message from me on LinkedIn or a cold call or an email, I'm sorry. I am ruthless in terms of tapping into any person I know who might know them and giving them a reason to meet me. So I forced my way into the CEOs of all of the research agencies in Ireland and I asked them for advice. I played the student card. I need your help. I played, you are the only person who can give me this advice. And I just did everything I could to get time with them.
Did you study psychology?
No. I studied business, which is basically not much. Business okay. is...
Because you're psychological. Like I'm a big fan of, I read a lot of psychology and study a lot of psychology books and stoicism books. Like all the stuff you've done there is classic psychology 101 of just social engineering.
Well, I'll give you the one that I still think, this is the line I came out with when people talk about research being stupid. So, Joe, you know, in the world where everyone has so much data, everyone's like, well, we don't need to ask people what they think because we know what they think. Mm. And that is true in a lot of senses. And people give the example, well, if you ask Henry Ford, you know, if Henry Ford, I think it was Henry Ford who talked about it. Well, if you ask people what they want, you know, they would have said a faster horse. And I say, no, Henry, if you ask people what their problems were, they would have said, well, I can't get from A to B very quickly, or I can't bring all of my family with me on the horse, or I'm giving facetious examples, but
it's a solid example. It's used so much because it holds true.
But good research would have identified the problems of the consumer, and then it's down to the innovator to create the solution. So Steve Jobs and Henry Ford would have been probably super anti-research. But when I talk about research in the customer discovery sense of when we're speaking to these research agencies in the early days, I made every mistake known to man. Now, when I speak to a Tesco in the UK and I'm trying to understand their problems, I'd say if you compared that video to the video of me three, four years ago speaking to them, it's completely different. It's calm. It's being comfortable in silence. It's waiting for them to finish. It's asking them questions that are not closed, that are open. It's give me an example of how painful is this to you? How many people does this impact in your organization? And that switch, I think, has transformed our business and is what then completely changed our growth trajectory over the last 2 years.
So what do you put that down to?
Failing a lot and sticking at it. Like, I think we should have given up so many times.
Why didn't you?
I had such a strong why. In your Instagram story this morning, you were talking about how it felt a bit overwhelming, you know, being your own boss. And you looked in and you saw the people in the cubicles. You said, that's not going to be me. And they gave you the kick. I think my why has always been so strong. I've always known I wanted to do this since the first day I started working on an idea. And I think no matter how bad it's been, and it's been terrible at times, mm-hmm. it's never going to be as bad as working in a company where I have 3 hours of work a day and I'm, you know, watching Netflix or whatever it is, and I have no fulfillment or drive. You know, the people always talk about the grass is always greener around, like, oh, all my friends are on holidays, which they are. Most of them are in Australia or Costa Rica or wherever they are. For me, the grass is always greener is, God, how terrible would it be to be that? Just for me individually, there's nothing wrong with going down the accounting or the legal or whatever it is. I am not on such a high horse that I think that's better, but everyone is so unique and individual. For me, most of my friends think I'm insane and they have no idea why I'm doing it. But for me, my why is so strong. I know why I'm doing it. And I know whether Bounce blew up tomorrow or got sold tomorrow, I'd say that was the best 5 years I've ever spent. And I think that is why, that's what will keep me going. No matter if, like, everything's probably going to go wrong over the next few years, but a few things might go right. And that's what I live for. That's what's going to be really exciting.
That's bloody beautiful. That's brilliant. Like, because that's how I feel. That's, you know, the last couple of years have been pretty horrific at times. Mm. And never once did I even ever consider, there's no other option.
Mm.
for me, it's only forward on this path. There's no other option. And here we are on a Friday sitting in a beautiful private cinema, getting to talk to someone like you. Like, that's as good as it gets for me. That is living. That is the passion of what I want to do for the rest of my life, is to be in charge of my own destiny. So it's so refreshing when someone can put it into such clear and beautiful words. It's incredible.
But it's not romantic either.
Like, no.
You talk about, The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. And if anyone has ever read that book, again, so important to realize, like, so many people either, when I'm hiring and they're asking, I ask them, why do they want to join a startup? There's a red flag immediately if they answer the same way, which is just like, I want all the autonomy and I love the idea of like pursuing this ultimate goal and like the wins matter way more. And that's, they're good answers. They're all true. But you can see the little glimmer in their eye where they're like, you haven't been hit in the face. I don't think there's that glimmer of romantic idea of what a startup is in all of these podcasts and all of these movies and all of these books you read. And that's why it's so important to hear the other sides of the story, because if your why isn't strong, you'll fail 3, 6, 9, 12, 24 months, 36 months. I think the best piece of advice you can give to any founder who thinks they want to set up a company is it's going to be longer and it's going to be harder than you can ever imagine. And if you're okay with that and it still excites you, go at it. And I beg you to go at it, because creating something out of nothing is, as we talked about before, is whether, no matter how small it is, if it's a business that does 10 grand a year in revenue or your work Vivo or Stripe, it is the thing I love most about business in general.
Going from zero to one. And I talked with you about this over coffee. That's the bit I always go, whoa, hold on, back up, go back to zero to one. Because that's the bit when I picture people listening and sitting at home, I want one person to go, that's it. That thing Charlie did, or I'm inspired by Charlie. Because that's magic. That's 0 to 1 piece, whereby today there's nothing and tomorrow there's an idea and it generates the first euro. And like you said, irrelevant how much it builds in the early stages, how much it earns in the early stages, to create something that goes from your brain to your hands to a laptop, or to you build something, or you paint something. Just creation of an enterprise is phenomenal.
Yeah. And I think we definitely don't really celebrate wins near enough. I think if there was probably one flaw like around, because we talked about this before, but when I started channeling my folks into like academics in school and in college, it's super controllable. You know, you work harder, you do better is kind of the recipe. Startups, it's not like that. So I think that's what I've also found really hard, is that like in your leaving cert or in college, do more hours, get better for the most part. If you have a level of intellect, or that is like for academics, it's not like you're smart, but if you are good at books and that sort of thing, it is work harder, do better. Startups is the complete opposite. Like oftentimes you are working harder and you're going backwards.
Why?
Because there's too many uncontrollables. I think one of the things that, again, I've become so comfortable with is deep, deep, deep uncertainty. Being okay, and I had to say this to Rob Kiley, who's just joined us. He's our new chief commercial officer. And one of the things that when I'm bringing someone on and they're taking a huge bet on a company like us to join us, is I want them to know how hard it's going to be and how uncertain everything is and how uncontrollable everything is. Like, we have this story from Bounce where we were 4 or 5 days from closing the biggest deal in our history in April 2022, I believe it was, if I've got my dates right. And if anyone remembers what happened in April 2022 or March 2022, there was a certain thing going on in Ukraine. We had a strategic deal with one of the biggest brands in the world to invest in us, take a board seat, and pump more revenue than we've ever done into the business to roll us out across all of their markets internationally. The second last email I received from their head of venture was crack a beer from insert city where their HQ was. The last email I got was Vladimir Putin has invaded Ukraine and our stock price has dropped and we've lost X percentage of our revenue and we've paused all venture deals.
Oh.
If that stuff happens to you, you realize that I think I gave the best 4 months of presentations of my life to land that deal. And I walked out of Dogpatch Labs after I had a meeting, opened my phone. Ronan was in the middle of South Africa climbing mountains. Ronan's one of my co-founders. And I remember both of us looked at our phone, closed our phone, put our phone back in our pocket. It stung and it made me want to jump into the Liffey. And the next day I got back up and I looked at the next deal. You just have to get so comfortable that I did nothing wrong, but that's fine. And you got punched in the face. And that's, you kind of have to be a bit sick to keep going with that sort of stuff. But I talk about it because it's so important for people to know. Like that should have ended me. That should have just been, listen, guys, I'm done. I can't do this anymore.
It's one too many. How do you process that though?
You process that by letting yourself know that you couldn't have done anything differently.
Fair.
And okay, that how much validation did I get from this? Again, I'm such a glass half full person, which again kicks me in the teeth a lot of the time. But I came out of that meeting, this is where I'm a bit weird and where entrepreneurs can be a bit weird. I came out of that meeting going, God, we were so close. How much validation has that given me that one of the biggest brands in the world was about to trust us with their insights function to roll it out across the world? Yeah, we didn't close the deal, but like they signed the heads of terms and they committed to it. I think we're onto something here. And you know what? Thank God they don't have a board seat, because that's going to constrain our growth in the future. It's amazing how quickly the naivety and ignorance of an entrepreneur turns back to the glass half full and the what could be. And this is what we talk about, the happiness of pursuit, not the pursuit of happiness. You fall in love with what could be. And
what do you mean by that? Because I'm fascinated by motivation, and I'm fascinated by what drives entrepreneurs, because, you know, as I get to speak to more and more, I'm starting to see pattern recognition, and I'm trying to learn for myself, going, right, what is it all about here? What are we trying to do with our lives as entrepreneurs? And often I'm left quite cold by their answers. I'm kind of going, oh, I am really respect you, really admire you, would never want to be you. Like there's a lot of people I meet, I'm like, oh gosh, they're pretty miserable at the end. What you seem to have flipped it, and it's kind of how I approach it now as well. You seem to have flipped it. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I think I'm quite atypical as a founder in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways that a lot of investors probably wouldn't invest in me or a company that I set up because of how I look at what I'm doing and entrepreneurship. So what I mean by the happiness of pursuit is a mindset that has developed over time. As I talked about, if you asked me back at your first live show when you met me as a student, I wouldn't be speaking like this. This comes from learnings and failings and that sort of thing. But it's from an Adam Grant book called Originals. It's the final two paragraphs of the book. And he basically talks about originals. He's talking about the concept of what it takes to do something unique or apply a certain skill set to create that 0 to 1. And at the end of the book, he talks about how the American dream has convinced us all that we are in the pursuit of happiness, liberty, and all that sort of stuff. And the pursuit of happiness is you will reach a finish line and you will be happy. Because I consume so much business content and podcasts, I don't read near as much as I should, but I consume a lot of business podcasts and that sort of thing. And what I realize is there is no finish line. And once you remove the finish line, you realize that what you love about what you do is not being acquired for 100 million. It's how am I going to bounce back from that company saying no? And I do have to train myself into that mindset, because it's not something you roll out of bed and you go, yip-de-doo, this is amazing, I'm in the happiness of pursuit. Of course, it's hard at times, but I think it's really important that I'm not going to be any happier when or if Bounce gets sold. No way. If anything, I might be unhappier, because
that's generally the answer. But again, to go back to our very first quarter of this pod, that doesn't make sense. Psychologically, that doesn't make sense. Wait, what? You're a millionaire now and you're not happy? But that's kind of keeps coming true. The more answers I'm getting, going, yeah, I didn't feel anything.
Yeah, well, I'd say you'd feel more from landing your first customer. Like, yeah. Jesus, when we land Pernod Ricard or Tesco or Diageo or Coca-Cola, when we land these customers, we have a gong in the office. I'm ringing the gong. I'm celebrating. I want that feeling to last forever. It was worth the 9 rejections before. When's the next one going to come from? And the thing I'll feel amazing about for a short time is all of the employees that have sacrificed so much to work for the company, all of the investors like Michael Dwyer and Garrett Lamb and David Shackleton and Hurley and all these people who bet on us.
Some lineup there, you're dropping them like they're
Well, serious. Also, they deserve the recognition, because we have no right to do what we're doing. And I still don't think we deserve the people that have backed us. And I think that is what will make me feel amazing is, and particularly my family, like, you know, it's not just, you know, money, it's the time. It's when I tried to drop out of college in university to pursue Bounce, and they said, no, like, you can do this company, but you need to finish college. It's giving back to them is what's going to be the thing that will feel amazing. But that runs out, because that's extrinsic in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I'd say a month, 2 months after, you know, you get sold, I'm going to be, God, I miss working with Ronan and Brandon and Josh. Like, I miss giving my update to Garrett Lamb. I miss him ripping me apart in a strategy session and telling me why I'm wrong. I miss these things. Like, that's what we're here to do. And I think I talked about when we had that first session in the whiteboard and the fifth floor of the Arts Block in Trinity, where we were working on ideas. And it's an indescribable feeling of just going, I think I know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, which is, I don't know. Isn't that funny? It's like, I know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, but I don't know what that is, but it's this, I think. And that was really cool because when things go wrong, I know that all of my staples in life are really good. I have an amazing girlfriend, the best family, most supportive family, incredible friends. I love the people I work with. It's super challenging. And I pay myself enough money to go to Paulie's Pizza on a Friday evening and have a great weekend.
Paulie's is great pizza, to be fair.
And play my five-a-side and play golf on the weekends. And like, geez, if I had 10 million, I don't think I'd act any differently. I'd probably drive a bit of a nicer car and I'd probably, you know, take my family out for dinner more. But like, God, I don't think my life would be that different.
You've learned a lot at a very young age. I think I've only learned that in the last kind of 5 years, if even. And me and my wife talk about it like millionaire mornings. We do the thing we want to do if we'd a million or 10 million or 100 million. Well, and it's the simple things.
Do you know what I heard from our chairperson at dinner on Tuesday night in London? He said, money talks, but wealth whispers.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting thing of like, if I had a load of money, I would hope that I would do with it well. Like, I hope I would donate a lot and I hope I would give it back to all the people who supported me. I hope I would. But like, I almost am afraid of how it might corrupt the way I think now. Like, I, you know what I mean?
I don't think so. I think money and alcohol are the same. I think they accelerate and magnify. Mm-hmm. I think they make you more of what you are and reveal.
Jeez, don't tell me that, Gary.
No, but like, I think you're very humble here. I think you know, it just reveals who you really are. It doesn't change you. I think it just accelerates and shows more of who you really are. So if you're a dick when you're sober, you'll be a bigger dick when you're drunk. Like, we all know those people. Yeah. It's the same with money. I think, you know, if they're miserable now, they'll be miserable with money.
Yeah.
I think it's the same. I think it's stripping it back to its bare bones. If you can't be happy today, you're not going to be happy. It's such a cliche, and you do kind of go, it's a cliche. But as you get older, you kind of realize that the cliches are all kind of true.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And that's why I've internalized so much of the advice that people like you and your guests have given, is because they're probably right. You know, like, all of these really successful, highly intellectual, wise founders, I should probably listen to them. And I think for the first few years of building Bounce, I thought I was listening, but I wasn't. And I think in the last 18 months, 24 months, with all of the shit that has gone wrong with Bounce, and like, this isn't shit that is like, obviously we're still doing great, but I mean, like, all of these horrible things that happen to the company and you start to internalize the advice and you start to realize it's okay. It's fine. And
is that reps? Is that doing your reps as an entrepreneur? 100%,
yeah. And like, I think one of the pieces of advice that Rob Kylie, who's joined us, has given me is like, stop playing the startup card still. Stop playing you're the young founder, the rising star type thing. It's like, you're in this industry 5 years and like, you have your scars. And like, yes, it's only 5 years. It's not 15. It's not 20. But your feedback loop of taking on information is fast. And the way you recover from scars is quick. And like, you should back yourself more. And I think that's an Irish thing, because like if you're down we've talked about, if you're in the pub with your mates or whatever it is, like, you know, the people don't talk about how well they're doing. And I love that about Ireland, by the way. I think it's amazing. I love the way that there's so much wealth in the country, but people still drive, you know, whatever car they want and live in whatever areas that they want, and they do their millionaire mornings or whatever. I love that. But I do think that people don't want to talk about how well they're doing, or they don't want to talk about the things. And it goes flip on the things that are going wrong then as well. So
I like doing these. Yeah. I think we need more. I say this almost every podcast. I think you have to see it to be it. I'm a big believer in, because again, pattern recognition from Chad and the founders, I'd say 95% plus of every founder, someone in their family has been an entrepreneur or a business owner or a leader. So like, that's not coincidence. That is not an accident. That's not like, oh, it just happened. If you look at like a lot of sports stars and families, they'll have one or two in the same family, and you're kind of going, well, that's unusual. Obviously, genetics is a wee bit of it, but I just do think you have to see it to be it. And I think in Ireland, we do need a bit more of this. We do need to uncover. That's why these interviews are long form. Mm. It's not, and Ben, who's in beside us, revealed this the other day. They're not interviews, they're conversations. Mm. And that was such a brilliant insight that I was like, that's it. Mm. That unlocked a lot for me, because I'm like, they're conversations. They're not like, and then Charlie, what happened? And then, and then, and then, and then. Because that's the default way, right? That's how you think you should have a conversation. But it's these deeper conversations that people who've discovered a bit of self-awareness and are willing to be open.
Well, that's why it's important, because, you know, like the book Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, he talks about sports stars. A section of it is about sports stars who, I think it was the Canadian ice hockey team. And if they were born earlier in the year, so my birthday is January 2nd, so I should have been an ice hockey player. But the earlier you're born in the year, the more opportunities you get because you're that bit more developed. And then you get into the earlier training programs and then you get better. And then suddenly, if you look at the like birthdays of the Canadian ice hockey team, loads of them are between January and April. But if you tie that to what you're saying there is, the earlier you can expose people to being able to do your own thing, being able to build your own business, to have role models you can look up to. Like when I went into Trinity, you had Isolde Ward from Food Cloud, you had Patricia Scanlon from Soapbox Labs, you had Eric Risser, you had Dan Hobbs. You know, he was earlier on. Like, so I was going through Launchbox and these accelerator programs, but I had all of these people doing these obscure things and loving it. And I was like, okay, I can actually do that now. I also had my parents and I also had other people, but like that is liberating for a young person. You're so moldable. And I think like exposing them to this way of thinking and this way of being. And like, if I think if Bounce got sold for a lot of money tomorrow, I think one of the, like my missions in life is to encourage the right type of people and as many type of people as possible to start their own thing, not to try and replicate Workvivo or Stripe or any other company that you think that's what great looks like, which, and they're amazing companies. But like, if you want to set up a coffee box, if you want to set up a clothing rental company like Nikki Dwyer, one of my friends, has done, if you want to do anything, like I remember when Nikki launched that, I just was like, this is amazing. Like another person doing a cool new thing that wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for them. And that is just amazing. And I think,
what do you think we need? Because I think about this a lot. And I think about the pod, and the pod is good, but like, how could we magnify this? How could we get more people into entrepreneurship, you reckon?
It comes back to the answers you probably heard a lot. I think the thing I would like to spend more time in future years is the blend of very specific skill set and context and very specific money. And what I mean by that is we were very blessed with the network we got access to through Trinity and through early stage advisors, whereby if we needed someone with deep financial expertise and 10,000 euro, we got access to them. And what that provided was more than money. It gave you the money to validate what you were doing and to give you that like oomph. But anytime we needed anything financial, we could pull on that person. And I think VCs do talk about how we'll give you money and then you'll get access to our network. Mm-hmm. But there's a break in the chain there. And this is nothing against VCs. They play a huge role in what we're talking about here. But I think at the very early stage, at university stage, at early stage, founder stage, what they need is money and they need support. They need advice. They need context. They need introductions and they need a shoulder to cry on if that's what it is. And I think we were blessed by that. But if you can get the early stage investment right with the right type of investors, I think that's amazing. And I have this like idea around, there's not many verticals you need deep, deep expertise in. I talk about Ronan is technically one of the most gifted people, you know, in the company. We have Josh, who is just like an idea engine. You've Brandon, who is, again, the complete opposite of Josh from that point of view. And then you look at our investor pool and we've people like Enda Dowling, who's in Workday. We've David Shackleton. You've these people who are deep in their domain expertise, who then fund you, who will answer any phone, anytime you call them. And that is a superpower as a founder, because my belief is that any problem I'm about to face has been solved by this very close network. And there's no break in the chain. I'm directly calling Gareth. I'm directly calling Michael Dwyer, directly calling any of these people. And it's like, this customer has just done this thing. What would you do? And suddenly I've saved myself 3 months of trying to figure it out myself. So I think if you get more of that and you get that more structured, like the NDRC is doing insane work, the Dogpatch Labs, all of that stuff, we need more of that. But I love the idea of like one-to-one connection from investor or advisor to founder in a way which isn't people giving them, give me a retainer for every month and I'll give you my advice. I love the idea of, if I'm going to write a check for, let's say, 50 grand, obviously I don't have that money, but if I was going to give 50 grand, I'll be like, I'll give you 25K and I want the other 25K in, you know, stock options. And I will be responsive for any email, phone call or text that I can do. And you have complete access to my network. I think that's a much more compelling way of investing and supporting startups, because I think young founders need to learn to ask more. They need to learn to get the confidence to ask people for help. Most people are sound. If you are genuine, authentic, and are direct with your ask, anyone will meet you. I've met pretty much everyone who I need to in the country. because I, for whatever reason, I had that confidence to ask. It's probably young, male, egotistical, that sort of stuff. But it's, I had that confidence to do it. And it is one of the reasons why Bounce is a success.
I think there's a self-awareness piece as well, because you do meet people who have the confidence to ask, but haven't got the social intelligence to be able to ask in a correct way. I think there's a huge part of time and closing
of the loop. Like when I first met up with you for advice, I was like, okay, I need to keep Gary in the loop with our progress now. And I need to make sure if there's anything I can help him with, which is rarely anything with a lot of these people.
No, but that matters. That matters, because not that you're sitting here today because of that, because I meet a lot of people and like, the pod is at a great level now, isn't it? It's getting kind of popular and you get a lot of inbound people. Oh, I'd love to meet you for a coffee. I don't do that at all anymore because it's a gigantic waste of time. My focus is this. So now people like you have an in-depth, I want to play long-term games with long-term people. That is my thing now. I've taken a long time horizon on this, but I've had to choke off the start of the funnel because a lot of people don't know why they're meeting you. They're meeting
Know themselves.
Yeah. And I'm like, no offense, this is nothing against you. I'm not doing that anymore. But I always say, if you've a specific ask, I will do anything I can do to make that happen for you. And generally, 95% of people do not reply.
Yeah, well, what is it? You can have anything you want, but you can't have everything you want. And I think if you apply that to advisor meetings, I think that's a good piece of advice. Is like, again, I even talk about it with my team. I was having this conversation with Rob in the airport last night on the way back. And I was like, I was trying to figure out, how do I get my team to ask me for more help? Like, I am this box of information and context that will accelerate their growth in their individual roles. And I was trying to figure, like, obviously, like, they aren't approaching me because, you know, I'm the founder or whatever it is. But I was like, how do I unlock that? Because if people are specific with their ask, I will get it done. Like, I have such a high productivity when I get given tasks that I'm like, ask for help and I'll do it. And it's the same. Any student, any entrepreneur that comes to you with the right ask, anyone, like, I will do anything I can to help.
Exact same.
But it's all about how to do it.
It's a specific ask. Again, we both share a bit of a Trinity background. I teach a good bit there. And every time I'm teaching networking, which I love teaching because it isn't taught really, or it's taught really poorly. So I love doing it. I'm like, right, here's how you reach out to the right people in the right way. And I'm like, be ultra specific. People look to mentors. I'm going to meet Charlie and he's going to be my mentor. What do you want though? They're trying for you to figure out their business model or you to figure out what business they should do. A guy reached out to me. I went to college with him. He reached out. He goes, oh, I want to meet you and chat about the startup scene. I'm like, I don't know what that means. What do you want for me to do? Because I don't really want to meet up and chat about the startup scene. I'm not really in it. I don't have any value there. It's not like I run NDRC. It's not like it's my job to cultivate the scene. So I think having a very specific ask, 90% of people will go, yeah, no problem, Charlie. Here you go. Yeah. Talk to Gary. Talk to Ben. Yeah.
I just have like a deep respect for the other person's time. Like, do you realize how busy people are? And not even with work, I mean with their personal lives. Like, do you think you'll probably want to chat to Michelle about the startup scene on your millionaire morning and coffee? You don't want to chat about with some guy that you don't even know the context or the intent of it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just respect for people's time.
Time is ultra important, especially like since we had a baby, like you do, not to be that person, oh, it changes your life, but it does sharpen your focus. It sharpened my focus about where my hours are because you only get so many hours in the day and I'm a big believer and you have so many effective hours. I'm a big believer and I think you're very similar. Yeah. Effective hours. I only have 10 energy credits in a day. I need to make sure those 5 energy credits, probably been generous, the 5 energy credits I have to work, they're high impact.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a leakage. There's a leakage in the energy credits if you're like, and I find some days I'm going from meeting to meeting to meeting. I'm like, what did I achieve today? And a lot of this is long-term stuff, but I'm super selective about who I'll meet now. I will meet 90% of people who are intro to me. So if you go, Charlie, Gary, I need you to meet so-and-so, that's probably going to happen.
That's like Connor Murphy's Bridge company. Like that's what that's all about, is like the double opt-in, the trust, the credibility beyond LinkedIn, which is a lot of, you know, the spamming messaging.
Exactly. I met Connor for breakfast last week. Huge fan of him. Massive fan of him. He's a great person because we met, we got on and we've kept in touch, but specifically kept in touch. Like we'll help each other or he'll, I just love meeting him. He's a fascinating dude, but they're the kind of relationships I want over long term because it's the, I've no interest in transactional relationships.
Yeah.
How have you approached building out as a founder? Because you've mentioned your co-founder a number of times now. Was it always going to be a co-founder relationship for you?
Always. Always. Why? I you might have guessed, I'm a complete extrovert. I also am the joke. I have no hard skills. You know, that's the joke. Like I completely rely on other people, and I am acutely aware of I'm the one doing this podcast, but I owe it to the founders I set the company up with. You know what I mean? So my role within the company as the sales side or the commercial side CEO means that I'm the one invited on these podcasts. But
you're the beautiful face of the company is what you're trying to say.
Face for radio, you know. But how did I build out? Was it always going to be co-founders? Yes. It is the greatest experience of my life working beside the three guys every day. Ronan, Brandon, Josh, they are exceptional. They are like absent of ego. They are intrinsically motivated. They have given up more than anything to do what we're doing at Bounce. Like Ronan was the year ahead of us in college. So he like bunked in coffee shops for a year building the first year while we tried to drop out of college. Then none of our parents let us. A big slap on the wrist. Finished out college. He worked full time. No money. We gave him a MacBook as a thank you. When he had offers, he was gold medal in computer science in Trinity, top of his class. Oof. Spoke at the, you know, the 50 year anniversary for the computer science building. The smartest person I've ever met in my life. And he just trusted us and Why? He backed us. I don't know. I genuinely, I was listening to the Dan, the Protex AI episode that you did. And
love those guys.
Dan Hobbs describing, you know, was it sales? It's just the transfer of enthusiasm. I think I do have an ability to transfer enthusiasm, and maybe that is my skill. I think productivity per hour and the transfer of enthusiasm are the only two things I'm good at, but they're what I just channel all of my energy into in the business. Ask me to build a financial model. Ask me to build a very detailed process or playbook. Ask me to do proper reporting. Ask me to do anything. I am terrible. And I'll tell you I'm terrible. So that's why I decided to do co-founders. I have no idea how I got so lucky. None of us were friends in college. We all got mutually introduced to one another and we all fell into each other's laps and it worked. And you talk about luck in startups and you talk about bad luck and you talk about good luck. God, like I have no idea how I got so lucky with meeting those people. And today they're the reason why it's so exciting to do what we're doing, no matter how hard it is. So complementary skill set, deep trust and enjoyment of each other's company.
How do you build that trust?
It's hard. You know, we've had founders exit the business, so if I was sitting here and, you know, we had no founders exit the business, we would be going, God, this is how you build trust. Mm. You know, we've nailed it. We don't nail it at times, you know, you make mistakes. And I think with us, I think the key is, so Brandon and Josh are kind of engineering managers and myself and Ronan are more at the executive decision-making level. So you think that's also really weird. Two really weird things about our business. Myself and Ronan are co-CEOs, most investors run for the hills, and we've four co-founders, two of which have no kind of executive decision-making power.
Red flags going up all over the place here.
We're the most uninvestable business in the world. But it's all built on trust. How do you build it? Time. And there's also two types of trust. So there's people like me who are burned, which is basically I'll trust people from the get-go until you burn me. And you have people like Ronan, who is earned, which is he won't trust you until you earn the trust. Both are completely fine and completely okay, but it's having the emotional intelligence and the empathy to understand how that person clicks. It took me years to build up a level of rapport with Ro where he could completely trust my decision-making.
Interesting.
Like years. So myself and Ronan was CTO, I was chief commercial officer, and then we went into the co-CEO roles when one of our founders left the business. You don't get it right immediately, but open communication, deep vulnerability, and like basically emerging of what the both of you are like and realizing that when people are like, why do you have co-CEOs? I would say, come work with us for a day and you'll realize that two is better than one. We have the systems in place to, you know, mitigate for like decision-making whenever that might be needed. But everything Ronan is good at, I am terrible at. And everything I am good at, Ronan could be good at, but he probably just chooses not to. But the two of us know what we're good at. And I just realized, well, we're going to beat any other CEO because there's two of us.
How does ego not get in the way here?
Ego does get in the way sometimes, of course. I think the thing I've worked hardest at over the last, one of the things I've worked hard at over the last years is the reduction of my ego. Ego plays a huge part in everyone. And I think the first step is acknowledging it and how that might impair your judgment. We all have biases. We all have, as much as I talk about God, I don't care about it being acquired or I don't care about my stake in the company. Like I don't have a very big stake in the company relatively, you know, we you know, five co-founders and one left the business. So you can probably make out the maths. We've raised some capital. You can do the maths pretty quickly. I don't care. I want to build an amazing business. And whatever money I get out at the end of it is going to be more than enough because my life won't change. And I think that's the mentality of it. I think, how do you remove ego? I think it does come back to the relationship you hold with these people and a deep, deep self-awareness that you have to work on. Seeking the truth about what you care about, I think is important, but it's an ongoing journey. I'd say if we had this conversation in 5 years, which I hope we will, I hope maybe in a different setting and without the headphones and the mics, but I would say I'll be giving you a very different answer. And maybe it's because I've made a few more mistakes and that means my knowledge of it is deeper. But I think it's a very, very difficult thing, but it's something that you just have to confront every day and every week. And if you find yourself really deeply unhappy or angry with a decision another person has made, it's like trying to flip it on you and like, how could I have handled that situation differently? What have I done wrong? Because there's no, like, it's so easy to blame. It's so easy to point at other people. It's so easy. Their ego got in the way, not mine. Look at me. So I don't know is the answer. But deep self-awareness and trust with the individual and then being as vulnerable as you can as possible with them. You know, me and Ronan would go for a pint very regularly just to try and continue working on that depth of relationship. What motivates Ronan? What motivates Brandon? Why is Josh here? Why would Josh leave the business? How do we mitigate against that? And I think people are poor at communicating. So working on that constantly and never becoming complacent is probably the key.
That's pretty damn interesting. How do you approach decision-making then? Because this is a very unique dynamic. So I want to play around with this a little bit. Co-CEOs, four co-founders, how do you make decisions? How does shit get done?
High performance builds trust, and trust builds good decision-making is how I would describe it. We know that we are very good in our individual domains and that for a person to get in the way of someone's decision-making in that domain is terrible for the business. And one thing we've worked on particularly this year is all of our roles have become more defined because the bigger a company gets, the less hats you wear and the more specific in your domain you get. And I think what we worked on was all four of us owning something, owning a metric and having complete autonomy to deliver on that. But you, if you have clarity of goals, you have autonomy and execution and consistency of empathetic feedback, those three things are the key to trusting people to deliver. And what builds the ability to allow people to make decisions without input, and this was key for me and Ronan, is that Ronan smashes his targets every time. I may not smash my targets because we keep just tripling our revenue targets as you do in any given business. But Ronan has watched me defy expectation in what I'm able to achieve. So that builds trust in how you make decisions. So would Ronan make different decisions to me? And would I make different decisions to Ronan? Yes. But I would prefer the 80% decision quicker. And what I mean by that is if we sat in a room and we tried to get to the 100% decision, the business would move too slow for us to grow at the nonlinear growth that we're pursuing. And I remember hearing Barack Obama talk about the 51% decision. So he was like, I'm making decisions as the president so, so often that I need to get to 51% and then I deliver and I execute and I do not look back. And yes, Barack Obama probably made a load of terrible decisions. And I think it's probably documented that he did. Probably also made a lot of very good decisions. And that's the way you need to think of it. Is it deeply uncomfortable? Yes. Is it terrible when you watch someone make a decision that you think you would have done something differently? Yes. But you have to live with that and you have to trust the process. And I think that's the type of culture we've tried to build in the whole company. And we try and live it through our actions, not through our words. So Josh, you own that metric. And last quarter, Josh and Brandon had the best quarters they've ever had last quarter. And what did we do 6 months ago? We gave them independent clear goals. We allowed them to deliver on it. And we removed Ronan, who would have been overseeing them, away from it because Ronan had too much other stuff to focus on. What happens a quarter later? Brandon and Josh have absolutely blown out of the water. It's amazing, isn't it, when you trust people who are good?
So you make it sound so simple.
It's not simple.
But it's not simple.
5 years of failure, and in my team, I definitely don't have it perfect.
How did you get to this? Because this, as a young startup, like what, you're just dropping so much clarity of knowledge here. How did you get to this? Because this, as a relatively early stage, I know you're not really early stage, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, if your career is going to be 40 or 50 years, like this is early in your career. How have you guys come to this level of understanding and decision-making?
Seeking advice from people who know more than you is probably the most important thing. But actually wanting to listen, I think I mentioned this a few times, is key. I think the way that you take this on is by speaking to people who know about it and then putting it into practice and failing until you get it right. And I know that's not probably not the perfect snippet of advice that you can give, but how did we learn? It was a desire to learn. And it was a frustration at why aren't we growing quicker?
Okay.
If you ask me what my biggest frustration is, it's like, why aren't we 5Xing every year? Where is this nonlinear growth? I have tried everything. I have tried to sell to every customer. I've tried every process. I've heard every type of person. You're like frustrated and you want to tear your hair out. But you have to trust it, that you just need to keep knocking, keep listening to people who have more of you. So frustration drives the desire to learn. The desire to learn forces you to meet people who know more than you. And past failures encourage you to listen.
How do you review this to make sure you're on the right track?
Every quarter as a business, we seek the truth through radical doubt. What I mean by that is we sit down every quarter for 3 days away from the office. And we only started this about, I think, Q3 of last year, where myself and Ronan and now Rob Kiley has joined us and other advisors that we trust deeply, like Ian Kiernan, like Gareth Lamb, and like our chairperson, Stuart Heron. We'll sit down for 3 days and we will review the previous quarter. We will realign or prime each other on what are our goals as a company. And we will seek to invalidate everything that isn't true. And what I mean by that is, as a founder, you convince yourself you're right so many times. That's enough information because you have to take bets. And when we're doing these strategy sessions, our goal is to kind of two things. It's to get super clear on what our goals are and then divide and conquer. Rob Kiley, you are doing these three things next quarter that are fundamental to the business. Forget everything else. Charlie, it's the same. Ronan, the same. And that's how we do it every quarter. So we review the previous quarter. We realize, Jesus, Charlie, you only got two out of those three things. Why did that happen? It happened because I met this person and they told me I needed to do this thing. We needed to rebuild our website. I was like, oh, we need an investor that is really important told me I needed to do this thing. Distraction, always pulled away. So ruthless prioritization is ultimately the goal of those sessions. And trying to be as honest with yourself as possible, which is the hardest thing. I promise, Ronan, give me 3 more months. It's going to go. I promise you. Promise you, it's going to work. Why do you think it's going to work? Make decisions on experience, not emotion. Experience of the last 3 months has proven that it won't work. If you can give me the evidence as to why 3 more months will make it work, let's go at it. I trust you with my heart. But if the experience is telling you that it won't, we need to change. And emotion is the worst thing for decision making. In every sense of the word. So that's how we do it every quarter as a company. And we also review the way in which we do it every quarter because it's never going to be perfect. And we try and tweak it and we bring in different advisors and stuff. But that's the way that we do it now. But that's years down the line and constantly seeking improved ways of doing things.
I love it. What is the future for Bounce? Like, because you've gone a long way in a very short space of time. When we're sitting down here in, say, 2 years again, what's going to have happened?
We had our strategy day about a month ago. So good timing. We're in the process of what we're calling Bounce 1.0 to Bounce 2.0. And Bounce 1.0 is the 0-1 stage of the business. It's taken us about 2.5 years since we got fully up and running. That is the 0 to 1 or 2 million in revenue, the big brands, the proof of you kind of know what you're doing. It's gaining traction to achieve the 1 to 10 million growth, or it's kind of 2 to 10, 2 to 20 million, whatever, that next stage of the business, we need to think about things completely differently. Because if you apply your learnings from a market like Ireland or the UK and assume that those learnings are going to be the same to build a global business, it's going to be really difficult. So we built this document called the Bounce 1.0 to the Bounce 2.0. And it's, what is this? And it's almost like having a funeral for Bounce 1.0 in a way. And then it's looking at Bounce 2.0. The next 2 years are going to be completely fundamental for our business. I'm moving to London. I'm setting up our London office. The goal is 12 months from now, is all going well, that I'll then move to New York and set up our New York office and try and build these satellite hubs in the areas where brands are most prominent. I would adore if as many employees that are currently with us are still with us. That's a huge thing that's important to me. I love people being on the journey. The experiences I share with them are really important to me. I hope we can continue to be a good company. We have things that measure what a good company is. And
what's a good company?
A good company for the people. So it's people, people, product and profit in that order, I believe is one of the phrases. So I want the people that if Bounce blew up in a year's time, that they said that was the best experience of their life. and that they independently have accelerated growth in their individual development or their career developments than they ever would have gotten in another company. That's what I seek. I fail at it, but I can seek, I can strive for the ultimate goal. There's many other things that make a good company, of which I'm still trying to figure out. But for the people, that's really important to me, that I'll try and benefit for. And what that means is I will never pursue unnecessary growth and compromise on the people. I talk about for that myself. I do not work longer than 10, 11 hour days ever.
No longer than 12 hours.
And that's like with a lunch break. I'm not like, I don't work evenings. I start earlier. I have my lunch break. I'd never work in the meeting. If any founder tried to have a meeting on the weekend, any employee, I would be here, not the employee for us. It's the type of business I want to build. It's my company. I decided to run it that way. If you're an investor who wants me to work 120 hour weeks, burn my relationship with my family and friends, I'm not going to do it. So that's just how I am. So that's the type of company we try and build.
I respect that a lot, because I think that's the modern entrepreneur. I talk about this a lot. I feel in my core there's a shift. It's probably a shift of my own bias, but I feel that there's a shift in entrepreneurship, that the old model of like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to grind it out for the next 10 years and then I'm going to sell. And a lot of stuff you've said have kind of rang true. So my biases are in full swing here today.
Yeah, but I'm 25, right? And what is, as an investor, what I would say to them is, what's going to get me to build Bounce for the next 10 years? Mm. Is it working on weekends, or is it allowing me to have holidays? Is it allowing me to have the weekends I want? I was at All Together Now last weekend, had one of the best weekends of my life. Imagine an investor going, you need to work through the weekend. No. But what's going to cause me to go 5 years longer? So longer time horizons, and how we believe you do that is, so that's the reason for like long time horizons, but also look at it from an employee's point of view. We had that model of clarity of goal, autonomy and execution, consistency of feedback to that person. If that person is tired, run down, they're not going to make good decisions, which means they will not hit their goal. I will not trust them to hit their goals because I'm watching them make poor decisions. Poor decisions come from sleep deprivation, overly stressed, all that sort of stuff. So it's really, really important to me. So sorry, I'm derailing from your question, but in 2 years' time, I hope that we are much bigger, of course. How much bigger? I don't know. I'm going to be as big as I possibly can. I will want to be as global and as world-class a product as I possibly can. And I hope to continue our DNA as being a disruptor and to be a person who is customer-obsessed and competitor-aware. I want to be obsessed with the industry. I want to disrupt it. I want to continue listening to customers. And I want to continue growing at as fast a pace as possible while protecting what's important to me.
Damn. Let's go to the quick fire round. I don't think we can top that. Let's go to the quick fire round. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur must read?
I have three books for three very different reasons. Beautiful. I already mentioned one of them.
The better.
Hard Thing About Hard Things, because it will give you your why. Destroys the romanticism of a startup. If you still want to do a startup after reading that book, you do it, please. Atomic Habits, James Clear.
Yes.
Superpower for any startup is ruthless prioritization and time management. And the third book, because it kind of changed how I think about startups, is Originals by Adam Grant.
Strong recommendations. What's something you didn't pay enough attention to early on and now wish you had?
Listen, sell, build. In that order. We did it the opposite way for the first 2 years.
What have you sacrificed for your success to date?
This was an interesting question because I view it as compounded sacrifice. I feel like I've chosen to do the hard thing every week for 5 years. Yes, I missed out on my J1. I missed out on moving away with my friends. I missed out on travel. But I actually trick myself into not thinking about the grass is always greener. Yes, I've sacrificed a lot. I'm not going to sit here naively and say I haven't. But I prefer to avoid the question because I'm super happy with my decisions. And I try and tell myself there are no bad decisions. There are only trade-offs.
I like it. I'm going to give you 10 million euros today. What are you going to do with it?
What would I do with it? I think I would like to give back as much as I could to my family. I don't mean, you know, the donations and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I've been supported by the most amazing people in my life who have given everything for me to do what I wanted to do. That would be first. I'd probably live in a slightly nicer apartment and a nicer car, but I would try and keep the most amount of money so that it would liberate me to take bigger risks with Bounce, because I'd have more money than I ever needed. So Jesus, I would make such a difference. I would move faster. I'd be more aggressive. I would try and push myself more. And I would love to invest in more startups. I absolutely adore helping founders and I would love to get into that world. Maybe not now, but in a few years.
What's something in your daily routine you wish had started sooner?
The planning. I started in Vineyard, so earlier maybe is a silly answer to this question. But the reason why I think it's important is that if you become good at your productivity per hour, you will open up the ability to have an actual work-life balance. Mm. So I use the Notes app. I have tried every planner and I keep coming back to the Notes app. I plan out my day, everything I want to get done to the minute, including my social life. So if it's see Ellen in the evening and not be on your phone or go to the cinema with the lads or whatever it might be, I plan everything.
What do you do? You just plan every hour?
7 to 8, 8 to 9, 8 to 15 to 8:30. And I have the like check boxes and I delete it every day. And I know what a good day looks like every time I go to bed.
I love it. Unusual. I like it. I'm going to give you 1 million euro, but you can only invest in one person or company. Who is it?
In the global markets, I think Daniel Ek from Spotify and Brian Chesky are just, their stories are amazing. From Obama owes to make the money at Airbnb to the Spotify documentary on Netflix is amazing. But if I was to give 1 million to anyone, it would be Ronan. And I would go, do whatever you want. You'll make me more money than anyone I know.
It's powerful to be able to say that. If you had to start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
It would be something completely different to both the global tech startup I'm trying to build now, because I like the idea of doing something completely different and having just like being a novice again.
What's that?
In terms of, so I think the thing I would like to do, because of what I've sacrificed with this business, I would like to do something that would allow me a different type of life. So one that requires no management of people and would allow me to travel and be more flexible, because that's important to me. I think what I would love to set up is what I talked about that early stage fund. I would look to have a super strict entry process for founders who have small amounts of capital to invest with deep, deep domain expertise and build a really deep community of people that are worth way more than their money. And it means that they're more like a partner vibe. So we have no employees, but each of us have their domain expertise. So I think that's an idea that I've been kind of flirting with.
I like that.
That I think I would like to look at in the future.
I like that a lot. I'm in. What do you believe that other people would disagree with or find strange?
We've kind of already talked about it. So people won't maybe not find it that strange, but I'm pretty afraid of being acquired. I'm afraid of how it's going to impact my life. I'm afraid of how it might impact my relationships. And I have this weird fear around it happening. So I believe that I won't be any happier when I get acquired, which is maybe not surprising for anyone who has read all these books and listened to these podcasts. But I think it is unusual for a 25-year-old founder, because you're like, why are you doing it then? And I think
that's most people's goal.
And it's just not mine. I really want to get acquired for the other things, and what it will probably allow me to set up that fund and liberate me to do whatever I want. But I don't want it for the reasons why people might think.
What do you spend money on in your daily life that brings you immense happiness?
Experiences. I have never, ever regretted spending money on time with my friends and family. I have never checked. I try not to check my Revolut or my AIB after nights out, holidays, events. And like my girlfriend and my friends will be like, you're all ridiculous with your money. But it is what is most important to me. I work so hard during the week that all I want to do is spend time with my friends at the weekend or my girlfriend or my family. It's the most important thing to me. And I hope I can continue. I learned it from my granddad. It's just like, he joked about like, I'm going to piss my last cent up against the wall. And I love it. He's 89 and he is the best person I've ever met. And I just think it's amazing. Just soak in with all of the money you've left, with all the experiences you can make. And that's what I will never regret spending money on.
What's your final bit of advice to every entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur listening?
Cross the start line, forget the finish line, and focus on the happiness of pursuit.
Charlie, that was one of the most exceptional conversations we've had. We've had a lot of conversations on this podcast. Where can people learn more about you and Bounce?
Myself, as my friends will laugh at me, I am on LinkedIn and they'll slag me for being on LinkedIn.
I love LinkedIn. Don't let them slag it, Charlie. I love LinkedIn.
I am on Twitter, but I don't tweet. I am the worst type of
lurker.
I'm a lurker.
Lurker.
My email is charlie@bounceinsights.com. I reply to everything. My inbox is zero pretty much at the end of every day. I am that type of person. So you'll get me. Or if I don't reply, I have seen it.
don't worry yeah, again.
So that's where you'll get me again. Anything I can ever do to help someone, I always will.
Brilliant. And Bounce.
Sorry, bounceinsights.com. Please, we're trying to fix the website. We're focusing on more important things. We will overhaul it soon, but bounceinsights.com is where you'll hopefully see a nicer look in the coming months.
Charlie, that was an absolute pleasure and look forward to our next chat in a couple of years.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's great to be here.
And that was my chat with Charlie, an exceptional entrepreneur. We're going to be hearing a lot more about Charlie and Bounce in the coming years. Wherever you're listening, whether it's Spotify, Apple or YouTube, hit subscribe. It helps the pod to grow and helps me and makes me happy.
If you want to learn more about the pod, go to mrgaryfox.com.